For most boys and girls, time seems to slow down around the beginning of December, or just after Thanksgiving. Of course, we know that time doesn't actually slow down, but the anticipation of Christmas puts our impatience into overdrive. For us adults, the opposite happens because now there are gift-giving deadlines, and deadlines seem to come faster than not. The bending or the lengthening of time, we know, is more the effects of psychological perception than reality. However, perception can be reality. So if in our mind time appears to stretch, then for us it really slows down, and vice versa. As we enter into the last stretch before Christmas, it is interesting for us Catholics to contemplate the miracle that happened 2,000 years ago, the miracle God, through the action of the Holy Spirit, gave to all the gift of his only begotten Son. For in this most auspicious event, was it merely perception or was it reality? In our world, it seems like the so-called battle between science and religion is over. Actually, according to some, and depending on which circles we're in, it's been over for a long time. Science and rational thought won, and religion and faith lost. For us Catholics, this is not only shocking, but scandalous. While we did not invent the pursuit of knowledge, the Church spent nearly two millennia to help develop it, preserve it, and organize it. For it really was the Catholic Church that founded the university system and its tenet of academic freedom, starting from the cathedral and monastic schools as a way of developing philosophy and theology and to let ideas flow without fear of retribution. So given this, it's quite insulting to think that the modern universities of today, even some so-called Catholic ones, whose very existence came from the faith, almost universally reject academic freedom. Many have squashed the whole concept and instead have opted to create safe spaces in an attempt to protect their people from opposing views. If we squash thought, then how can we exchange ideas? But then again, I contend that in this era, universities are less about the pursuit of knowledge and wisdom and more about technical training. Sad to say, because I can't recall the last time I met a billionaire philosopher. While the perception often trumps reality, nowhere is it as clear and as painful as the dichotomy between faith and science and a common but erroneous reduction of religion and reason, as if they were opposed to each other. As a priest and bishop, the Dominican friar St. Albert the Great knew about philosophy. He knew about theology. And it was during his tenure at the University of Cologne, coupled with his inquisitive personality regarding the natural world and the world around him, that he pioneered the scientific method, the simple observation, description, and classification of phenomena in our world. He saw no contradiction between faith and science. And while we have a much more advanced technique available to us all the time, at our disposal, his scientific method did much to form the foundation of the way scientists still interpret our world. A few months ago, I did a search to see if I could find a list of famous scientists who were also Catholics, for I knew there were many. For instance, Nicholas Copernicus, the famed mathematician and astronomer who postulated that the Earth revolved around the sun instead of the other way around, Although the paperwork for his priestly ordination was lost, he was on the election list to become Bishop of Ermland in East Prussia. Georges Lemaître, the scientist who developed the prevailing Big Bang theory and an expert in physics and astronomy, was a priest and a professor at the Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium. Julius Neuland, a Holy Cross priest of Notre Dame University, developed the technique to make synthetic rubber. Much to my surprise, my research reported that hundreds of scientists were Catholic priests or bishops. Of course, I knew that history is littered with priest-scientists, but I never knew that there were so many. And for this alone, we should be very proud. Because for each priest that is a scientist, there are dozens or even hundreds more lay scientists that were also faithful Catholics, and not just Christmas and Easter Catholics, but ones that embraced and lived their faith daily. Now, St. Thomas Aquinas, a student of St. Albert the Great, tells us that man must abide by four categories of law: eternal law, divine law, natural law, and human law. Eternal law corresponds with the mind of God as seen by God himself. It is eternal since God is eternal, is out of time, and is completely unchangeable. God directs all actions and movements of the world towards their ends, and it is why we can easily say that God is everywhere. Divine law comprises the precepts and commandments that God revealed to man in Holy Scriptures for leading a moral life. Natural law comprises the eternal law of God imprinted onto all things, and it is through this that all items have their inclinations to their proper acts and ends. Human law comprises all the laws of governments, which hopefully are derived from practical wisdom. Just as there is order in the universe, there is order in these laws, especially if two things should come to contradict each other. Eternal law takes precedence over divine law, which takes precedence over natural law, which then again takes precedence over human law. It is this ordering that tells us, for example, that murder, which is a divine law, cannot be canceled by human law, even in such difficult and heart-rending cases of euthanasia and abortion. But for now, I want to look specifically at natural law. For most people, the term natural law seems to be equal to the laws of the physical world, and that's true for the most part. God set into motion everything in our universe. As I mentioned before, all items have an inclination to their proper acts and ends. Gravity, for instance, affects all objects in a specific and purposeful way. We know this because we use our senses to detect and observe and catalog the effects of gravity on other objects, including us human beings. Thus, we humans are subject to gravity just like other objects. Absence the presence of my legs or my muscles, we know that I would surely fall to the ground. With all of our ability to log, to catalog, to infer, and to conclude, and the fact that with our intellect we can predict outcomes, we have deluded ourselves into thinking that we have mastered the universe. Oh, to be certain, there are lots of things that we don't quite understand, and we readily admit it. But that's only because we think that we haven't yet figured out the science. Years ago, I remember this quite well, and many of you probably do as well. A television remote control was relatively simple. You just ask the person next to you to get up and change the channels. Now, we can wirelessly flip stations by pushing buttons on a handheld device. While we don't necessarily need to know how it works, that it does work, we attribute to the ingenuity of man and his ability to figure things out. So what about miracles? How is it that Jesus could tell a paralytic to get up? How could Jesus calm the storm? How could he cause a fig tree to wither and die? Or as we are so eagerly awaiting, how could Mary conceive a child through the Holy Spirit? Well, St. Thomas gives us the answer, but we aren't always disposed to it. And the order of laws, eternal law and divine law, take precedence over natural law. I just said that. The trouble is that if we determine that we live in a universe that proffers only natural law, then of course we view miracles with skepticism. That's because a miracle reduces only to one of two things: a man-made illusion meant to fool us, or a disruption in natural law. In our modern way of thinking, we find both options offensive. We hate the first because we don't want to be the target of a con or a simple sleight of hand. And we discount the second because that can only be a contradiction of natural law. Obviously, we don't yet have the science to show how something like that could happen in reality. But we're always making advancements in technology. You see, we are conditioned into believing that natural law is the law of science, and that it is a constant in our world. In point of fact, if we really did consider eternal law, divine law, natural law, and human law as all components of law, then we'd have no trouble seeing that miracles are not only possible, but probable. So instead of seeing a miracle as a disruption of order, as is the case with only natural law, we can now see that miracles are ordered. They are something that God invoked, and they take precedence over natural law. And because they take precedence, and that they are often contrary to the natural order, it is why we wonder at them. In them, we see the glory that is God. The truth of the matter is that we often see miracles, but we use our modern natural law-only litmus test to determine whether it really is a miracle. And unless it can pass muster, then it's simply not a miracle. We just haven't yet got the science to explain it. And this is too bad, because that means we want miracles on our own terms and not necessarily on God's terms. And that is precisely where our faith comes in. In point of fact, there have been miracles in our presence all the time. What we want is perhaps to have lead turn into gold, or our loved ones recover from their illnesses, or even to predict and win the lottery. That would be a miracle. But if Jesus did miracles in the New Testament to help us recognize him as the way, the truth, and the life, then why would we be so interested in things of this world? The way, the truth, and the life are not of this world, and that's the difference. Some historical miracles are quite obvious. The reminder that scientists determined years ago that the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe could not have been made by human hands, or that the sun danced in the sky at the presence of Our Lady of Fatima. Even the secular press reported on that. And the various active Eucharistic miracles strewn about the world, where dried blood liquefies or the host becomes real flesh on a regular basis. Or even the unexplained cures or disappearance of malignant tumors in some cancer patients. And then there's the miracle of transubstantiation, the conversion of ordinary bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ at each and every Mass. We believe this, and we know this, and we cannot deny it. For certain, there are charlatans in the world, those who would trick us into a false perception of reality by a disruption of natural law using sleight of hand, misdirection, or parlor tricks. But we need only ask whether or not it's for some earthly benefit or for the glory of God. If it's the former, then we can be skeptical. But if it's the latter, then we need to recognize it as such. For as many witnesses can claim, our hope lies in Jesus Christ, who, through the miracle, was born of the Virgin Mary and really became man. He is coming. Let us be prepared.